Blog Talk
morning.
Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. In today's podcast, we have the honor and the privilege of interviewing Mr. Hugh Sazegar. He is the CEO at Texas Cybersecurity Group, based in Houston, Texas. They're one of the leading, managed service providers or cloud security services to SMBs in that area. Hugh, thank you for your time this morning, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
Well, good morning, Ravi, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for having me with you this morning.
Okay. Hugh, good morning. Yeah, we looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us any highlights of your career?
Yes, I started my career a long time ago in Schlumberger. Actually, I was the head of the IT outsourcing division of Schlumberger. And after that, in 2004, so I worked for Schlumberger for over 20 years. And then I started my own cloud computing company called Texas Group in 2004. So we were, in fact, delivering managed IT services to small to mid-sized businesses in Texas from 2004 to 2015. And we were probably one of the first companies which introduced cloud computing and help desk services to SMBs, small to mid-sized businesses, in 2007. And so we sold that company to Conicom Minolta in 2015 and then started our cybersecurity company, Texas Cybersecurity Group, in 2018. Which has become one of the top 200 MSSPs, managed security service provider, in the U.S. actually, since then.
Oh, well, congratulations on that. Now, that's quite a feat. Now, I was just wondering, how did you get the name Texas? Is that just a spinoff of the actual name for the state?
Well, it's a wordplay, basically. So Texas means technology access. And it also rhymes with Texas, so we found the name to be we thought about it and found it to be really interesting. So we started with Texas Group, and then 3 years ago we added Texas Cybersecurity Group. We added cybersecurity in the middle of that name. So
interesting.
Yeah, it rhymes with Texas, but at the same time, it means technology access, basically, for small to mid-sized businesses. Texas.
Okay, excellent. Now, now you've been in business for, you said, since about 2004, I think, if I'm correct.
Yeah, we have been in managed IT services for a long time. I mean, Schlumberger was actually managing 250,000 desktops and 50,000 servers worldwide for 200 major companies like Louis Vuitton and Metropolitan Police, Scotland Yard in London and so forth. But then when I started my company in 2004, we did cloud computing and managed IT services for SMBs, companies anywhere from 10 to 1,000 users, basically. And so we have been in this business since 2004. So for the past 17, 18 years, specifically for SMBs, small to mid-sized businesses. So we have been dedicated to SMBs. We don't work for larger companies, for enterprise-level companies, but we make sure to bring the enterprise-level cybersecurity and managed IT services support to SMBs. So we give them the look and feel as if they were managed by a large firm or as if they were an enterprise-grade type of firm. So we give them the same look and feel, same type of technologies and so forth.
Excellent. Now, it seems like you've been around for quite a long time, obviously, but do you have a presence in other countries as well?
We don't, actually. We are dedicated solely to the U.S. at this point. And the reason is quite simple. The IT business and cybersecurity business is mostly a local type of deal. you know, for example, if you have a cloud, people prefer to have their data in the cloud in the U.S. and they if you work in other countries, they don't like that, and vice versa. And the same goes for cybersecurity. So we are solely dedicated to the U.S., mainly to Texas to start with, and then customers all over the U.S., of course. And our parent company also has offices in 7 or 8 different cities in the U.S. So we are mainly in the United States. We have a company in U.K. Our parent company has a subsidiary in U.K., but it's not it's a good sized company, but it's not as big as our parent company in the U.S.
Okay, excellent. Now, you had mentioned obviously that the S&P are your main bread and butter, but do you target other companies, maybe like the federal government? Or suppose you do have a Fortune 500 company or Fortune 400, and they want your services. How do you still go with them, or?
No, we don't. And the reason is quite simple. The set of tools, technologies, and best practices do not apply when you go from segment to segment. So if you are dedicated to the small to mid-sized businesses, you have a set of tools, technologies, and best practices which are set to the needs of SMBs. And when, if you ever want to serve larger companies, you're not talking about the same set of cookie cutter type of technologies. I mean, it's totally separate type of services. You have to ring fence your services, and it jeopardizes basically your services to small to mid-sized businesses. So we tried once in the past, I would say it was around 10 years ago when we got a much larger company, and it dragged our focus and quality of services, and all our attention was shifted towards that company and large business that we were starting to serve, which made us start losing our existing base of loyal small to mid-sized customers. So we stopped very quickly and understood that you cannot mix and match segments and verticals. You can match verticals. You can have different verticals, but segments is extremely difficult. You can serve a company with 200 users and at the same time serve a company with 40,000 users. It's extremely difficult to manage both.
Okay. So I'm actually looking at your website right now, and you have a wide range of services going all the way from asset discovery to security intelligence to behavioral monitoring. Can you kind of expand a little bit more on these services to our audience, please?
I'm sorry, what was the question again? Do we what?
Yeah, I'm at your website right now, and you offer quite a wide range of services, going from asset discovery to security intelligence to vulnerability assessments. Could you just expand and describe a little bit more of these services to our audience, please?
Sure. So basically, our bread and butter is intrusion 24/7 intrusion detection and managed security services. And as part of that, so basically what we offer is a 24/7 CM and SOC monitoring. So we have a SOC, Security Operations Center, based in Texas, in Houston, Texas. And we combine it with a very strong CM technology, which is Security Information Event Management. So it's a very strong technology, which basically analyzes all the logs coming from desktop, laptop, servers, firewalls, routers, serve, and all type of devices that you have in your environment. So we analyze and aggregate all those logs and then find out if people are intruding your system, if somebody's trying to hit you with ransomware, if somebody's brute force attacking you, or if somebody's downloading huge files or sending information on their SSL tunnel outside. So those services then are divided into multiple layers of security that we call security, layered security, basically. It's like a Swiss cheese. We offer asset discovery, and asset management so that if there is a foreign asset sitting there, we can detect it immediately upon command and control. If somebody tries to ask outside, so what should I do now? When asset comes in, they sit there for 6 months, and then they try to ask, you know, Russia or Ukraine or whatever country they have come from, to as they ask, what should I do now? And that's when we catch them. So that's called asset discovery and asset management. As part of the service, we offer vulnerability assessment and management on a monthly basis. Of course, intrusion detection is our 24/7 service to find if somebody's trying to attack your network. We do behavioral monitoring, basically finding out if employees are downloading huge files or uploading huge files, if they are sending information on their SSL tunnel, or if they're trying to cheat. And then security intelligence, global threat intelligence is a service that we offer with tens of thousands of other companies worldwide, you know, in collaboration with FBI and CIA and other high-level intelligence agencies. We have honeypot servers worldwide, like 15, 20,000 honeypot servers which are out there. We leave them open to attacks, and when they get attacked, we learn from those patterns of attacks, and we enrich our technologies every day. So those are the type of services we offer. We also offer two other services which are unique. One is that we fish our customers on a campaign basis. So it's called phishing campaign, to train them in case they open files that they shouldn't, or if they do something which is wrong. We train them, and we send the employees to mandatory training for 10 minutes. And we send a report to management. And then also we have another service which is called EDR, Endpoint Detection and Response, which is the machine learning and artificial intelligence, basically antivirus, that we install on all the endpoints of our customers in order to detect non-traditional viruses and ransomware and spyware which are attacking the networks of our customers. So, which is based on Cylance, basically. Cylance is a machine learning and artificial intelligence, AI type of device. So that's basically, those are the services that we offer, which is a comprehensive. It's 8 or 9 layer of security, and we believe that the more layers you have, the better it is. And you know, once we install our 7, 8, 9 layers of security, it's very difficult to penetrate our customers' networks.
It's interesting because I just wrote a book on artificial intelligence. It just came out in print actually last week from the publisher. So I'm very intrigued by the AI component. Now let's move on to the let's move our show now on to the just the SMB focus right now. I get a lot of questions, you know, when I do my writing of articles and blogs for other clients. What is the difference between a CIO and a CISO? A lot of people, and sometimes I kind of blur the lines of differences and kind of use the two terms interchangeably, but are there any big differences between the two? Or are they pretty much the same?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have basically, I would say they are part of the same team, the same IT team. Information technologies has multiple parts in it and multiple departments. The CIO, Chief Information Officer, is in charge of managing the IT infrastructure and setting the strategy for the IT infrastructure of a company. So they you know, they're in charge of telling us where the cloud should be. Should it be in Azure, or should it be in AWS, or should it be private in-house? They set the tone for having, you know, the common operating environment for the IT. Which applications should we use? Should they be in the cloud? Should they be SaaS based? The strategy for IT and the direction. So basically, the CIO is the man who is in charge of adapting the IT environment to match the business strategy of the company. The CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, is someone who either reports to the CIO or they both report to the CEO or CFO. The CIO and CISO could be at the same level. The Chief Information Security Officer, CISO, is in charge of what we call IPDR, which is Identify, Protect, Detect, Respond and Recover from Cyber Attack, IPDRR. He is in charge of setting the infrastructure in a way that is going to be totally protected. So he works hand in hand with the CIO, but he has a team which monitors and manages the cybersecurity of a company on a daily basis, 24/7 basis. So he identifies gaps inside the environment. He puts the protections in place, and then he detects 24/7. He puts the monitoring system in place, and then he responds to cyber attacks on a daily basis when they get attacked. He has a team which just responds and which is working 24/7 relentlessly to push back attacks, which are happening every day on companies. For example, some of the companies that we are managing, I can tell you that we have caught 200 brute force attacks during the past 6 months on a given company, like 30 per month, one a day, brute force attack at least. So that's the role of the CISO. He's Chief Information Security Officer. He has a team of, I would say, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 people, and they're doing this on a daily basis. And they basically protect 24/7 what's going in and out of and monitor what's going in and out. They work hand in hand with the CIO and his team to inform them about what's going on. And also, if they see what vulnerabilities on a daily basis, they have to ask the CIO and his team to patch the environment, to patch the security, put the security patches in place, to close the ports which are open, left open, and other vulnerabilities which are happening inside the environment. Like, for example, if they see a desktop which has a virus like a Ryuk ransomware, they have to segregate it immediately. So they call the IT teams to go ahead and intervene immediately in any country and segregate that machine. So that's the role of the CISO and his team. Basically, I don't know if that's enough. The response is enough for you, or if you need more details about the differences.
I think that's fine. I think that works good, Hugh. Thank you very much. Fraud. That's a topic we hear about headlines, but nobody really seems to be, doing much from what I'm seeing so far. Everybody's so worried about ransomware, and everything else that's been going on, like SolarWinds, the Exchange, Microsoft Exchange hack. What is the level of fraud and losses to SMBs because of cyber attacks? Do you have like a dollar amount, or do you have like any other metrics you can share with us?
Yeah, so the amount of, so SMBs, I'm talking about companies from 10 to 1,000 employees. They represent 55% of attacks in the U.S. 55% of all cyber attacks in the U.S. are targeted at SMBs. I would say many of them are left severely impaired when they get attacked. Many of them go out of business. But the average cost of a single attack in the U.S., all companies included, large and small, is roughly around $5 million per attack. $5 million per attack, or roughly $300 per employee. So, and for SMBs, the average cost of a single attack is roughly around $40,000. So so basically for some companies like Target, the cost of the attack was $5 billion. For some other companies, the cost of a single attack could be $10,000. But the average in the U.S., all companies confusing and included, I mean small and large, So it's going to be 5 million, and for SMBs, it's roughly around 40,000 per attack. So that's basically the statistics. And 55% of SMBs have been somehow breached in the past. Some sort of breach, whether ransomware or whether it's a direct transfer of money or just damaging their data and destroying their data and so forth and so forth.
Now, Hugh, a lot of SMBs are kind of in a catch-22 position. They want to protect their businesses, but their budgets are tight, obviously, being a smaller business. They don't have the money to, make it, for lack of a better term, to throw around like the bigger companies do. So what are, from your knowledge right now, what are SMBs doing to help mitigate the risks of becoming a victim of a cyber attack?
Well, unfortunately, 99% of SMBs are lagging behind larger companies. And so what happens is that larger companies, because either they're in the stock market and they have to report to the stock market, or they have a board, or they're large enough to be able to afford it, or they're forced by their board to have something, they are putting the protections in place. But smaller companies are lagging behind because nobody is obliging them to do it. And they're not forced by their board or by the stock market to do it, right? So I would say 99% of SMBs are lagging behind. And it's pretty simple. Their philosophy and their state of mind is exactly the same as, if somebody tells you need the flood insurance, you say, well, my area is not flooded yet, so why should I take flood insurance? And it's the same thing. Many of them, they wait to be hacked, and then they react. They say, well, we are not hacked yet, so why should I put in place a system to protect myself? But the good news is that the cost of getting cyber security and cyber protection is not that high. I can tell you that for a company, for example, for an SM small to mid-sized business with, 50 users, probably they're generating $10 million in revenue with 50 users, 50 employees. But the cost of cybersecurity is less than $1,500 per month. Putting all the protections in place, such as intrusion detection and SOC monitoring and SIEM monitoring and Cylance and asset discovery, asset management and phishing and everything else, is for a company with 50 employees, is $1,500 a month. So I think it's more an education. They need to be educated. They need to be aware. So it's an awareness issue for them. They have made a big mountain out of this, saying, oh, my God, it's going to be too expensive. But indeed, and in fact, it's not that expensive, and they just need to be informed, educated, and aware about this fact. So the cost of cybersecurity usually should be roughly around 20%, 25% of the cost of IT. So if, for example, for their IT environment, spending $6,000 a month, well, for their cybersecurity, they should spend between $1,000 and $1,500 a month, which is 20 to 25% of the IT cost. So that's how they should,
go ahead.
Yeah, that's how they should reason and how they should think about the potential cost and be less scared of implementing something and not wait to be hacked before reacting. Because once you get hacked and once, they attack you with a ransomware, for example, and they wipe out your data, you have to understand that the cost is extremely high. The cost is reputation damage, the cost is losing your customers, losing your reputation, losing 2-3 weeks of work because you have been down, you're going to be down for 2 weeks. You're going to lose the majority of your data if you don't have good backups and good recovery systems. So there is a huge cost. And sometimes the cost, we have met with companies with 200 employees generating $200 million in revenue. They were down for 2 weeks, and the cost for them was close to $10 million. And spending you know, 3,000-4,000 a month. Imagine that's going to be 40,000 a year. They need, you know, they need, you know, in order to recover, you know, they have to spend 100 years to reach what they lost in 2 weeks. Yeah, you see what I mean? So it's, you know, it's a no-brainer for many of them once they realize the huge cost of getting hacked. You know, they sign with two hands there the contract to get cybersecurity immediately. So it's just an awareness issue for them.
But now, if they're aware of these lower costs, why do we still, as a society, have this knee-jerk reaction, the SMBs, that they don't react until they're hit first? Why can't they have that proactive mindset, okay, you know, we need to do something before something really bad happens, because the cost of recovery far outweigh the cost of implementing something right now. Why can't they have that proactive mindset?
Well, again, because, you know, it's a nice to have, and it's not a must have. You see what I mean? I mean, it's not,
right.
They can, you know, in order to work every day, you need a table, you need a chair, you need a computer, and so forth. And so you need those, and that's why it's a must-have if you want to go to work every day. Cybersecurity is not a must-have. It's not today. It's not a must-have. I mean, it's something that you should have, but if you don't have it, you can still continue to do your work until you're hacked. And that's a dilemma. These guys, you know, if they can bypass it for now because they can do their day-to-day work, they bypass it because they say, okay, we don't want to think about, you know, putting it in place right now. We don't want the hassle. It's exactly like an insurance. I mean, again, I think the analogy with flood insurance is really talking, because they say, okay, flood might happen within the next 6 months. So between now and then I wait, I save some money. And then if there is a risk of having a flood, then I take the flood insurance. So you don't know when the cyber attack is going to happen. And that's probably one of the reasons why they hesitate. It might happen today. It might happen in 6 months. Sometimes they say it will never happen to me. Why should they attack me? I've talked to a lot of CEOs who say, well, why would a company attack me? And we, you know, why would they attack me from Russia? And we tell them it's all automated type of attacks. They don't care. They don't discriminate between large and small companies. I mean, it's all automated. As soon as they see a hole, they get in. And that's the part they still don't understand, and we need to educate them for.
Okay. Now, can you give us some examples of what cyber attacks SMBs have faced or that you've helped SMBs recover from? Are they the same as like SolarWinds attack, the Microsoft Exchange hack? Are there any differences, or what do SMBs typically face?
No, it's the same. We are seeing basically the main, you know, there are some attacks which are happening from different parts of the world. For example, from China, we see a lot of attacks on large companies. The Chinese attack steel companies, for example, they attack trade unions to get the information of steel companies, for example, to get their pricing so that they can come and dump their steel, bring their prices down in the U.S. and dump their products here. So we don't see a lot of attacks from China on SMBs because, Chinese, they have much larger companies and they want to compete with larger companies in the U.S. The types of attacks that we see on SMBs are mostly ransomware attacks because, again, everything is automated and they just swipe. They put servers in place in Russia, for example, and they swipe and see as soon as they see a hole, they get in. And so we see a lot of ransomware attacks, and we have saved many, many companies from ransomware attacks, small, mid-sized companies from ransomware attacks. You know, our EDR, Endpoint Detection and Response, which is Cylance, detects fantastically well these ransomwares. And, we prevent them. We segregate the machines and intervene immediately. The other types of attacks that we see for SMBs are money transfers. So they get in, they lodge foreign software inside their system. The software sits there and monitors communication between CFO and CEO and accountants and controllers and so forth. And at some point, when the CEO is on a trip, for example, they ask for a money transfer, like $200,000 or $300,000, $500,000, $1 million transfer. And that's the type of interference which is happening, and we catch them through our CM technology. When the intruder tries to come in and lodge between communications, basically. That's the second type of attack that we see. The third type that we encounter are brute force attacks. A lot of brute force attacks where, there are, again, automated systems which try to get into servers and they try multiple passwords and try to get into servers through brute force attacks. We catch them there, right at the entrance, and prevent them from getting in. So that happens a lot with SMBs too, because again, that's all automated and there is no segregation. Basically, they attack all type of companies, large and small, and because they're in the cloud and they just get attacked indiscriminately, whether they're small or big. And the last type of attacks are internal, where employees try to cheat and try to send information outside or try to download huge files or upload huge files and do some forbidden type of stuff, and that's when we catch them. So those are types of attacks on SMBs mostly.
Okay. Excellent. Good to hear. Now, what are the different frameworks that an SMB can use to implement security controls and protocols? As I said, I just wrote a book on cyber risk. One of my chapters was actually doing audits and controls in the NIST frameworks. I know NIST is just one of the bigger components, but what else is out there that an SMB can adopt to do like a risk assessment and then implement the right controls to go with it?
Yeah, the one that we use for our services is called CIS. CSC 20, Center for Information Security, and CSC controls, critical security controls, 20 controls that we put in place. And we adapt our technologies and our services to that framework. For healthcare, there is high, people try to use that framework for if they have a healthcare company to comply with cybersecurity. In manufacturing, there is ISO 27001, and then, of course, there is NIST for larger companies and also for small companies. But the one that we see quite well-suited for SMBs is called CIS CSC 20, and we have adapted our technologies and our tools and our best practices to that framework. And it's really working well for us and for our customers.
Okay, excellent.
But all of them are great frameworks, and I highly recommend that small to mid-sized businesses get on board with one of them and try to manage their infrastructure in accordance with one of those frameworks, which really stipulates what to do. For example, for your software security, what to do for your Wi-Fi security, what to do for your cloud security, what to do for your monitoring system, how to monitor your environment, how to phish your employees, how to do 24/7 SOC monitoring, how to do intrusion detection. I mean, they really give you a framework of what to do and not to do. And then you can decide how much you want to spend to implement each of those measures.
Now, Hugh, one of the biggest buzzwords now being thrown around here in the world of cybersecurity is that of layered security. There are more technical terms for that, like two-factor authentication, multi-factor authentication, zero trust framework. But in the end, the basic concept is that you're implementing at least two or more layers of security or authentication. Can you expand on that more a little bit, please?
Yes. So basically, layered security is a buzzword, but in fact, what we say is that security is like a Swiss cheese. When you put one layer of Swiss cheese, you have holes. When you put a second layer on the top, you have less holes. And by the time you get to the eighth or ninth layer of Swiss cheese stacked on the top of each other, you won't see any more holes. You can try it at home. Just buy a Swiss cheese from any supermarket. Just cut it and start putting layers on the top of each other, and you will see that after seventh, eighth, and ninth layer, you can't put your finger inside and you can't see the holes anymore. Nothing can go through. And it's the same thing on cybersecurity. So you start your layers of security with great firewalls and, you know, great routers, great firewalls, and so forth. Then you put great antivirus system in place. That's two layers. Then you put a third layer, which is multi-factor authentication, double-factor authentication, and that's the third layer, which is great, but it's still not enough. And, you know, many people say, well, why is that? Isn't that enough? Again, it's the same thing. It's like if you say, why, when I only put three layers of Swiss cheese, I can still see holes? Well, that's the nature of the beast. You need to put more layers. And then some people say, okay, let's put the EDR, which is endpoint detection and response, AI-based and machine learning-based, and they put Cylance or Carbon Black or Sentinel-1 or any other technologies. But it's still not enough. Why? Because you need to monitor 24/7 what's going in and out. EDR is not going to detect if an employee is downloading huge files or sending information on their SSL tunnel. EDR doesn't detect brute force attacks. Doesn't detect if somebody is a foreign asset is sitting there and monitoring communications between the CEO and CFO. So you need to have a monitoring system in place. You need to have a CIEM technology in place, security information event management, to monitor logs 24/7. You need to put a SOC security operations center monitoring in place. That's the fourth layer. And then once you have the fourth layer, you say, well, now I'm protected. But no, you need a fifth layer, which is asset management and asset discovery, to find out if foreign assets are sitting there and trying to intervene. In the case of Target, the supermarket which was hacked 7, 8 years ago, the foreign asset was sitting there for six months, gathering information on credit cards. For 6 months. They gathered 90 million credit card records. Can you imagine? And nobody caught them because they were not monitoring. They were not doing asset discovery and asset management. And that's why the whole IT department of Target was fired, because they did not do what they needed to do. So you need to have asset discovery. That's the fifth or sixth layer. And then you need to have behavioral monitoring. You need to have 24/7 intrusion detection. You need to have global threat intelligence and security intelligence. Collaborate with CIA and FBI to find out how hackers are attacking and leave servers open to attacks like honeypot servers, so that you learn from those patterns and enrich your SIEM. So it's a multi-layer, and I would say once you add all these layers and you get to eight or nine layers of security, then you feel some protection and say, well, it's going to be very difficult for a company to penetrate my system, basically.
Okay, excellent. Now, Hugh, there are a lot of technologies out there. There's an next-generation firewall, intrusion detection, routers, this, that, hubs. What technologies do you recommend for an SMB to utilize to beef up their lines of defense? And in that regard, what are your thoughts of using AI to help with that process for, like, task automation, getting rid of false positives, and so forth?
I would say that the first technologies for SMBs, I would rather than talking about technologies, I would talk about processes. and methodologies. I would say they, you know, SMBs have to really have a good cloud offer. They have to be, you know, first of all, they have to be on Azure, Office 365, and use that security. They have to be, they have to have a great cloud either on Azure or AWS. They have to be as much as they can SaaS-based and use, you know, SaaS systems, because they offer a level of security which is extremely high. They need to outsource their IT rather than managing it in-house, for sure, because they have no know-how and they are not aware about the latest best practices and technologies and expertise, so they need to outsource and manage, use a managed IT services company to manage their IT. You know, once they have, they have to have a great backup and disaster recovery solution in place. Then, if you know, they absolutely need the AI and machine learning antivirus in place. You know, and this is beside having, you know, next generation firewalls and routers and antivirus and support. They need to put phishing in place for their employees for awareness. They need to put security awareness systems in place and best practices in place for their employees. And if they still want to go further, I think they really need to put a SIEM technology in place, which is Security Information Event Management, whether through an outsourced company like ours or internally, so that they could detect malicious attacks and malicious activities on their IT environment and in their IT environment on a daily basis. I give you one simple example. Today, because of COVID-19, many companies are working, many workers are working remotely from their homes, right? Which means that offices are empty or, you know, maybe 10% full. And they attack remote employees because it's much more, much simpler to attack a remote employee which has less security features on his or her desktop at home. And then once they get into the machine of the remote employee, they get through VPN into the system of the company, right? They penetrate through the employee which is working from home, who's working from home. They get into the network of the company. And once they're there, they start hopping from machine to machine, from server to server, and nobody is there to monitor all this. Nobody is there to catch them. And they can do maximum damage during these type of times, during COVID-19. The amount of damage which has happened during the last year in the past history, we went from 2 trillion loss in the U.S., 2 trillion to 6 trillion. Can you imagine? I mean, wow. we are on the cusp of having a $6 trillion loss because of cybersecurity in the world, out of which I would say in the U.S. we are talking about probably $1 trillion of it is happening in the U.S. Can you imagine how big that is? It's huge. It's $1 trillion is a huge. It's more than the budget of a country like France. Lost in cybersecurity attacks. So that is, yeah, I don't know if that responds to your question, but that's basically what SMBs need to put in place. You know, the type of thing, it's more on best practices, methodologies, and so forth, rather than using a specific technology. They have to look at the bigger picture and see, okay, how are we going to get protections in place and how are we going to put that multi-layer of security in place?
Okay. Do you have any customer success stories you'd like to share with us or any client testimonials that you can share on a non-confidential basis?
Yes, well, we have several, yes, of course. Without naming companies, I mean, a very good success story is one of our oil and gas customers in Houston, which, you know, generates thousands of barrels of oil on a daily basis, basically produces. One of their employees, I would say that not one of their employees, but the daughter of the CEO came to the office with a laptop and brought Ryuk, which is a very nasty ransomware, with her into the office. As soon as she connected to the Wi-Fi, Ryuk started spreading and we caught it immediately. Called the IT team immediately within 5 minutes. They intervened and segregated that machine. Without that, Ryuk would have attacked their server environment, the whole desktop environment. They have roughly around 50 employees, and you know they're generating over 100 million in revenue. And I could tell you that if they were down for 2 weeks, you imagine the amount of damage. Would be roughly $5-6 million worth of damage, but they didn't have any damage because we segregated that machine immediately. We got letters of thank you letters from the CEO, and they were extremely happy with what happened, basically. So that's one success story. The other one is on a pipeline company. We caught a group of employees which were selling information on their SSL tunnel, confidential information being sent out internally from in-house to outside. And we caught that too. You have to understand that in our monitoring system, we call that deep packet inspection. So we do north-south monitoring, which is inside-outside. But we also do east-west monitoring, which is between machines. And so because of that type of monitoring that we do with our system, with our CM technology and SOC monitoring, we were able to detect these malicious internal attacks on the company and prevented them by calling, informing the CEO and the CFO and so forth. And they intervened and punished those employees. So that those are, you know, two small success stories that we have. Of course, the others, we have caught so many brute force attacks and other ransomware attacks, but these are really the ones which were very important for us.
Well, congratulations on those. I think any customer success story in today's times is excellent news. So thank you for sharing. Now, Hugh, there are tons of MSPs out there in the United States. I've interviewed who knows how many. Apart from your niche focus on the SMBs, what separates you from the rest of the crowd? Why should my company, AST Cybersecurity, although we're a content generation firm, why should I come to you and say, hey, Hugh, I want you to help protect my business? What makes you different from the rest of the crowd?
So there are 10 million SMPs in the U.S., 10 million.
And 10 million?
10 million SMBs in the U.S. Yeah, just wow. In Houston, companies from 10 to 1,000 employees, there are 24,000 just in Houston. Can you imagine? 24,000.
Wow.
From 10 to 1,000 employees. Why would they come to us? That's a great question. Obviously, you know, there are many, many companies doing what we do. You know, there is, of course, the big names like Dell SecureWorks. There is IBM. You know, there is Arctic Wolf. I mean, you name it. I mean, there are many, many big names. What we tell our customers is that when you work with a big name, household name, you're a small company among, you know, many big companies, and you will be lost in translation. That's number one. And pricing might be an issue because those guys are really high in pricing, and, you know, they offer a premium service, and, you know, whether you're small or big, you pay a high price, and that's why you need to come to us, because we adapt our technologies and services to give you the best enterprise-grade type of service at much lower costs, and that's basically why they come to us. They come to us because we offer them the same type of tools, best practices, and services as IBM and Dell and others are offering. But we adapted to their environment and use technologies which are much more suited for SMBs and at much lower costs. So we give them the look and feel of a large company, but we give them that at a much lower cost, basically. So that's why they usually come to us.
Okay, excellent. Now, let me see where we have here. Let me see where we're on time here. As we wrap up our show here, we only have maybe just a few minutes left. What are your thoughts on the cyber threat landscape this year? Do you think COVID is going to be the big dominant news thing, or we're going to see more news headlines on ransomware attacks to the healthcare organizations, or there'll be more SolarWinds and exchange hacks, that kind of thing? Or what are your thoughts? What will be the biggest threat vector this year, do you think?
The biggest, the biggest threat today is the fact that we have remote users. And and the fact that people work from home, and it's going to, for the foreseeable future, it's going to be the case. I doubt that companies are going to open massively and ask their employees to go back to work, before sometime September, October timeframe, or maybe not before next year, 2022. And even then, I think that the landscape for remote working has in office working has totally changed. I think it's going to be 50-50. So in best cases, we will have 50% of employees who want to work from home and who don't want to go to the office anymore and so forth. And that adds a layer of insecurity into the equation, basically, makes networks much more vulnerable, because you have a bunch of employees, half of the employees, basically within even the next foreseeable future, who are going to work remotely from home. And they're working in a much more vulnerable environment because they have less protection, they don't have good firewalls at home, they don't have good systems in place. Sometimes they work from their home computers. The kids are working, playing on the same computer. They go on websites that they shouldn't. You cannot control them as you need. You cannot close down their environment as needed. You don't have a common operating environment. So those guys are going to be much more vulnerable working from home. And I think that the next few years, COVID and this work from home policy is going to create a lot of issues for SMBs and for many, many companies out there. So you need to be more vigilant. You need to put more protections in place, and you need to be more careful. And that's why we are seeing, in fact, a wave of demands coming from SMBs. Just last month we saw at least 10-20 demands suddenly from SMBs that we had been talking to for 3-4 years now. And they're coming back and say, well, how do we get protection? Can you help us? And so forth. Mainly because of COVID-19 and what happened with this remote workforce policy and so forth.
Okay. Well, Huey, thank you very, very much for being on our show this morning. It was certainly an insight.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I've never done a podcast. It was just to focus on the SMBs. In my writings, I try, in my blogs, I try to make everything more SMB-focused. I think there needs to be, an SMB advocate for cybersecurity. There are tools out there, and they're not expensive, and I think they're a lot more affordable than they were, a few years ago. But in that regard, Hugh, what is the best way for a prospect or somebody from our audience to reach out to you in case they want to ask you questions or they need your services? How should they contact you?
Well, they can. Our website is www.texascyber.com, and it's TECHCESS cyber.com. cyber.com. That's our, so they can make a request there, or they can call our number. They can call 281-701-3257, 281-701-3257 directly, or they can send me an email or an email to info@texascyber.com, info at texascyber.com, TECHCESSCYBER.com.
Okay. Well, Hugh, thank you very much for your time. I think we only touched 3/4 of the questions I really wanted to ask you in this podcast, but maybe hopefully we can do another one here very soon and we can cover more topics.
Sorry if I was too long in my response.
No. There's a lot more to talk about when it comes to SMBs. That's one of my areas I love to talk about because I like to be an advocate for them because they're such an important part of the American economy. But anyways, thanks for your time this morning, and we look forward to having you again on a future podcast.
Thank you for having me, Ravi. Thank you so much. Pleasure.
Thank you. Take care. And have a good week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.